You know, I have a love-hate relationship right now, a love-hate relationship with one of our favorite listeners.
Really?
Her name is Tally Duchesne.
Oh, I love Tally.
Yeah, she... Without Tally Duchesne, we might not know that today is a momentous day in the history of this very podcast.
True.
The fourth anniversary, evidently. Or is it third? Third or fourth?
Fourth.
Third?
Fourth.
Fourth anniversary.
Yeah.
Of the Merrick versus Buschinski podcast, evidently, which is very exciting.
I think Tally had to remind us last year as well, too. That's how embarrassing.
Yeah, probably. But also, she is the one who, when I tweeted out hastily the question of the day, hastily so I could get on the air and we could begin the show on time and everyone can listen to this genius at the designated time we say the genius starts, she's the one who pointed out that instead of Gordie Howe hat tricks, I wrote hat trick. The S, of course, is inferred.
Uh-oh. Well, okay, at least that's all you get beaked about by Tally. She always busts me about being old. Everything's either old or the fact that I haven't seen Mean Girls. She refuses to let
die. Well, you need to correct that.
Well, she gave me a copy of it in Philadelphia last year, which I left with her at the bar, and then she left to get pizza with Katie, and then I never saw the movie again.
That was amazing pizza, too, by the way.
Oh, that's that gross mac and cheese, disgusting. Oh, get lost. No way, man. No way.
Well, we're talking about Gordie Howe hat tricks off the top today because we had two of them last night.
Now, which one? Okay, let me ask you this. Which one do you think burned more again on the opposite team?
I would say the Tarasenko one, but why, what would you say?
Well, considering Dale Weiss has been public enemy number one for Milan Lucic and the Boston Bruins, the fact that, like, if you're the Boston Bruins, the last guy you want to get the Gordie Howe hat trick against you, I would assume is Dale Weiss. Now, I understand with Tarasenko and Nystrom takes a run at him and I get the last laugh, but that's just within the game.
Yeah.
This is a longer burning feud here between Dale Weiss and the Boston Bruins.
And the Nystrom thing is the reason I said Tarasenko, but on top, your point... You know, what might push Weiss over the top, and by the way, I don't know if Dale Weiss really has caught the ire of the entirety of the Boston Bruins, or if it's just Milan Lucic.
Did you see Gregory Campbell go at him last night? First of all, the first time these two teams met at the Bell Center this year, I was working the game again with Friedge and Mac, and we all thought, okay, here we go, Dale Weiss is going to take his medicine, Lucic's threatening to kill him, handshake alley last year, blah, 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 blah. Michel Therrien scratches him, right? Yeah. As to not have a circus at the home opener for the Montreal Canadiens. So I think a number of the Boston Bruins are kind of like, well, you know, today was the day that it was supposed to just happen, and now they're hiding him. So that stretches out the wick on the candle a little bit more.
Right.
So now he's finally back in there. I mean, first period, Campbell goes right at him. And good for Weiss, man. Weiss caught him with two quick boom in that fight. And they kind of took runs at him a little bit the rest of the game. Lucic, I don't know what's up with Lucic.
Now, I have no idea what's up with Lucic. Now, before
we
get to that, in fairness to Weiss, I understand the reason Campbell was so upset is that Weiss went up to him and asked him to autograph a picture of him blocking that shot on the PK, which, as you know, is the last thing you can possibly do. He hates it.
Very angry. At one of the most. Who else gets angry at a picture depicting one of the most heroic moments of the playoffs we've seen since Ian Lapierre jumped down in front of Paul Martin's slap shots?
Right? It's insane.
Oh, like, man. Yeah,
it's like don't have me autograph a thing of me throwing a winning touchdown in the Super Bowl.
Imagine Bob Uecker saying, "Oh, the picture with Noel Picard flipping me when I score the goal past Glenn Hall." No, I don't want to sign that picture.
It's like Willis Reed being like, "If you show me a picture of me limping out of the locker room to save the Knicks, I swear to God, I'm just gonna punch you in the face."
Yeah, I ain't touching that one. No thanks. Put that Sharpie away.
You mentioned Lucic, and there is generally something wrong with him. I think this season
I can't figure it out. Like. Okay, so go back to the first game. Again, this is like a two-game sample, but you really can spread it out. But the two games that are most symbolic, I think, are the two games against the Montreal Canadiens. The first game, you know, with the crotch grab and the fingering and all that kind of stuff.
Woo.
I know, and the, well, whatever. That game, it just seemed like his timing was off, his focus was off, he was standing in front of the net, not being Milan Lucic in scrums. Like, something was just wrong. And then yesterday, he was such a non-factor against Montreal. Like, there was a point where, like, so we're all watching the green room, me and Doug McLean and Elliot Friedman. Actually, Rich Sutter was in yesterday doing a regional game.
Ooh.
So Rich Sutter's in there. So we're all sitting. Scotty Morrison was there.
Rich Sutter. Without question, one of my top 12 favorite Sutters.
I thought, so it was Groucho, Harpo. Which would you?
Irish Sutter.
Irish Sutter. No, and so we're all like, we haven't seen 17 either in the frame or heard his name called by John Bartlett of the play-by-play announcer for the game in like a period here. Like we had like quickly checked like the time on ice on NHL.com just to make sure he was playing.
Yeah.
Where's he gone?
Lucic so far this season, 18 games, 3 goals, 7 assists. He's a plus 2 with 31 PIMs. The number that sticks out to me, though, dude, is the two numbers in particular. Right. One is the number 10. That is the number of games that that David Krejci has played this season. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, that obviously is something that directly is going to affect how effective Milan Lucic is.
Well,
the other number is 0, which is the number of games that Jerome McGinley has played for the Boston Bruins this season. Once again, affecting the effectiveness of Milan Lucic, who had an amazing season last year with those two guys healthy on his line.
Looking for something on that right side. Interesting about David Krejci, because as we pointed out before, not the fastest guy on the ice, but either was Milan Lucic. And those two guys kind of work in that. And you put Chris Kelly up there. Chris Kelly's a speedy player. Like just the dynamic between Chris Kelly and Milan Lucic just doesn't
click. There. Yeah. Listen, you cannot blame them for the Iginla thing. The Iginla listen, if you're one of these, I heard an old timer call up the XM morning show this morning. I was sitting in my car doing
that was me.
Alternate side of the street parking rules. I was listening to anything I could. And I was listening to the XM show this morning, and some crotchety old guy calls up and says they do a thing called like pluses and minuses on Fridays because you don't it's hockey and, you know, whatever. And he's like, my minus for the week is Peter Chiarelli, who's managed this Bruins team into a ditch. I'm thinking to myself, you can't have it both ways. You can't have a perennial contender without being cap-strapped. And that's why I can never blame Chiarelli for the Iginla thing, because the situation was this. You either make extraordinarily difficult calls beyond trading Johnny Boychuk next season to sign the guys they have to sign, or you bring Iginla back and just watch his skills erode. But there's no question that that loss from that top line, plus Krejci's injury, has sent this Bruins team that's hurt the Bruins more than losing Chara has, which is something I probably wouldn't have wagered on if you told me about it before the season.
First line right side's been tough. I know they have Seth Griffith up there right now, and he's probably not ready for primetime, first line minutes for an NHL team.
What a pretty goal.
I know, between his legs, behind the back, and regardless of what you may think of the goaltender and his performance on said play, it was a pretty nifty goal that we're going to see all season long.
Let's get right to the hot take here. Here's the hot take.
What's the hot take?
The hot take is this.
Okay.
Claude Julien and the Boston Bruins should be criticized for not playing Tuukka Rask last night. Now, I know Svedberg was in the plans. I know it was in the cards. I know they play him against the Leafs, then they come back with Rask, but things change, people change, conditions change. Rask was pulled from that Leafs game.
Yeah, he was.
He did not play a full game. He could have come back the next night and played. Yeah. And the bottom line is that it's not about him playing against the Leafs. It's about him not playing against the Habs. And they're hiding. They're hiding him from a team they're going to have to go through to win the cup. Is that a problem?
I understand that logic. I also understand the logic of sticking with what the plan was all along. We saw Willie Desjardins do this last weekend with Ryan Miller and Eddie Lack. This was the plan, and both goaltenders were fine with the plan. Tuukka Rask was going to play against the Maple Leafs, and then Nicholas Svedberg was going to play against the Montreal Canadiens. I can't fault a coach for sticking with the plan. Like, I know what you're saying, that eventually Tuukka, if Boston is going to have to go through Montreal, Tuukka is going to have to slay this dragon. I get that. I understand that, but we are not in February. We're not in November.
But isn't confidence building a process? Like the bottom line is,
the way these two teams
are going right now, they're going to have to play.
But if you're
maximum 4 games at Bell Center in the playoffs.
Okay, but if you're Claude Julien, you're Peter Chiarelli, you're saying to yourself probably right now, you know, we've been outscored now, 11-2 in the last two games by two Canadian teams, you know, divisional rivals, traditional foes, all the hyperbole. And
ate up that goal differential, by the way. They're only plus 1 of the season now. Jesus.
Gobbled that up like freaking Pac-Man. That was pretty fast. but you're probably saying to yourself, you know what? Let's not rush in anything. Let's not make any hasty decisions. Let's ride this out and see what happens when Chara and Krejci come back. You just got to kind of put up with it. That's why if I'm Claude Julien, I say to myself, is it the right time now for Tuukka Rask to face the speedy Montreal Canadiens and slay this dragon, knowing that we're down Chara. We have a lot of players. I mean, you look at that blue line, right? Joe Morrow and Zach Trotman. I mean, this is not really that ready for the NHL blue line right now. You say to yourself, maybe, you know what? Let's not have Tuukka fight this battle right now. Let's fight it when we have our full team. Huh. And you know what? Man, I know they pumped three in there in the second period. Svedberg was good. It could have been way worse. It could have been way worse. It could. You know, I had an interesting conversation with someone yesterday about the Boston Bruins, specifically the netminder. And this guy was trying to sell me. This is someone whose opinion I really, really respect, and so do you. And he was of the opinion that I know he signed until a million years from now.
Don't even.
Doesn't know whether Boston is really, really married to Tuukka Rask.
Well, that's an amazing opinion, considering we all kind of know that system could probably make a lot of goalies look better than they are. Mm-hmm. And as long as Chara has something left, and as long as Patrice Bergeron is playing upwards of 19 or 20 minutes a night, mm-hmm. a lot of goalies could probably look good on that team. I would say, sir, that Anton Khudobin could have probably been a pretty good goalie for that Boston Bruins team.
Just like Nicholas Svedberg could be a pretty good goaltender for that team. Oh, one thing I should mention, too. Playing out of his mind right now and probably deserves more praise than he's getting. Dougie Hamilton's been awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my question.
Okay.
So Boston gets pumped 6-1 against the Maple Leafs on Wednesday. Dougie Hamilton plays almost 23 minutes and comes out of it plus one. How the frick does that happen? How does that happen, Greg? Scores the lone goal last night for the Boston Bruins. Dougie Hamilton has been outstanding.
You better watch yourself, man. The size of your boner right now over Dougie Hamilton, you're infringing on Pierre's territory.
On what territory?
On Pierre's territory.
Oh, he does like Dougie, I know. Well,
oh, man.
Hey, there's the Dougie Hamilton played Niagara Ice Dogs, the OHL. He was a big defenseman. Ryan Strome was a sentiment on that team. As a matter of fact, you know, it wasn't just Dougie Hamilton, but his brother as well, San Jose pickup as well. You know, two brothers, athletic family. Dad played in the CFL. Mom was Olympian as well. Come from good stock.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Thanks. Freddie Hamilton is the brother.
I thought I was the guy with the terrible impressions. It's you.
I do bad impressions.
Coming up on the show today is some guy named Scotty Bowman, may have heard of.
Okay, so we go from Jeff Skinner to Henrik Lundqvist to Scotty Bowman.
Yep.
Okay, here's my question.
Yes.
What job is Matt auditioning for? What job does... You know the old saying, you don't dress for the job you have, you dress for the job you want? Maddie, where's our constant parade of Rob Rossi and Tracy Myers?
Just because Maddie seems to be performing like Sergei Samsonov in a contract year.
I think they should take great offense to that.
You think what?
They should take great offense to that, Rob Rossi and Tracy Myers.
I agree, they should, but I mean, even they would admit that, you know, there's a get and there's a get. And Lundqvist and Scotty Bowman.
Greg was behind Lundqvist.
Oh, okay.
Well,
you were behind Lundqvist?
That's true. Well, listen, who wouldn't be with that beard?
Oh.
The point is that...
Oh. you dropped your keys, Henry. Can you pick those up?
The point is that I'm glad for Maddie's sake that the weekend is almost here, because if you go by the escalation of guests, he would have to call a séance and have Jacques Plante.
I know we'd have like
on the next show.
Well,
I do.
We'd have the he's still alive.
Mike Babcock on my Hockey Nation show tomorrow.
Wait, who's still alive? Yeah. Jacques Plante?
Yeah.
Wait, Jacques Plante's still alive?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're killing all hockey players.
Wait, how come they don't trot him out for all the shit that they usually trot out those old guys for? How old is he? It's gonna be 90s, right?
Hang on.
Are you sure he's alive?
Yeah. Oh, no, hang on. No, he died in 86. What am I thinking of? Oh, my God. I'm thinking of someone else, totally. Yeah, no, he passed away in 86. Like, Jacques Plante. I was, never mind who I was thinking of. That's embarrassing. Yeah, he's still very
Who are you thinking of? Derek Plante?
No, Cam. Cam Plante. Jacques Plante.
House Plante.
I was going to say the ghost of Rocket Richard before when you get in. It's like, Jacques Plante, where the hell did that come from?
He was thinking of Chemical Plante or House Plante or...
Yeah. It's funny because I just did a thing on Jacques Plante like 2 weeks ago on one of our shows.
Who did you talk to then?
What's that? Didn't talk to him.
Who did you talk to?
Talked to one of the guys from the Society for International Hockey Research.
some homeless guy on Bloor.
Yeah, come Jacques Plante.
Come Jacques Plante, buddy, what do you want to know? Yeah, the mask thing, yeah. It was a gimmick for one night, but it stuck. Like the first guy said, yabba dabba doo. Oh, that's good.
Could I play today? Probably. No one wants to give me up to a shot.
That's why he died in Switzerland.
I'll tell you all you need to know about the Vezina if you give me a dollar.
What are you drinking there, Sean? Peach Schnapple. Anything in there?
You say Peach Schnapps?
Peach Schnapple? What's that? What?
All right, listen. Question of the day is about another guy who thankfully is still with us. That's Gordie Howe. Yeah. The two Gordie Howe hat tricks last night, Tarasenko, Weiss, we wanted to ask you, is the Gordie Howe hat trick overrated? Now, we know on this show we don't refer to it as a Gordie Howe hat trick.
Harry Cameron.
It's the Harry Cameron hat trick. For the purposes of the program, we will call it a Gordie Howe hat trick to not just to confuse the situation. PuckDaddyBlog at Yahoo.com, at Wyszynski, at Jeff Merrick on Twitter, hashtag at MVSW, or answer us on the Reddit that we have, the subreddit that we have, whatever you want to call it. And Scotty Bowman coming up. And with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Whoa, it worked.
Ooh.
Wow.
X-Files.
And the Mark Paul special, I think.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
So what you're saying here, Fox, is they get that $15 million. It goes into Gosby and LeBlanc's jeans or their company to operate the ring.
Greg Wyszynski of Yahoo Sports.
What I'm trying to say, Scully, is that there are questions that are bigger than us, bigger than our human race, bigger than we can understand and comprehend. There are forces out there that we can't control, that our government can't control.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyszynski.
I feel pretty good to company, having not really watched the X-Files all that much in the last couple of years. It's kind of stuck with me.
Love it.
It's not bad.
Of that show.
Not at all. By the way, if you are a fan of the X-Files, I can't recommend enough the X-Files Files by Kumail Nanjiani.
What's that
also
about?
It's a podcast that's rewatching the X-Files.
Really?
From episode one. Yeah, they're entering the third season now, and they do two episodes of podcasts, so it's not like you have to hear them analyze one thing for, like, you know, 2 hours or whatever. But it's really good, and it's really hardcore. And one of the things that he does that I absolutely love is after they get done discussing the episode, he goes back into the news groups from like the 1990s on the internet.
And finds out what the reaction
was from the news groups about those episodes in real time.
Why don't you and I do that one day? Why don't you and I do that for hockey games one day? We just pick random games from the past, do tons of prep, and then sit down and watch them and podcast.
Well, yeah, that's been a request from people, is for us to sit down and do a commentary track for an old hockey game.
I'm in.
The key, though, is to have a thing where the hockey game would be available for someone to watch. That's the tricky part. Like, can we find something that you can watch and sit down and put on your DVR or whatever and be like, okay, I'm going to watch this in real time as Jeffy and Greg talk about it. That's a tough part.
Oh, well, the 1976 Canada Cup, of course. Seems pretty obvious to everybody.
Oh, I would love that. Oh, man, yeah. I would love to sit down.
Okay, we'll do the Miracle on Ice game. Oh, look.
No, why would we want to do that?
Okay.
Spoiler warning.
Spoiler, they had to go on and beat the Finns.
Real quick, can you guess what the current goals per game average is for the Buffalo Sabres?
1.2.
Games.
1.2.
It is.
Yeah, we got a note about that at Sportsnet last night. That's
1.22. There are only three teams. Can you name the other two teams? Three teams currently with under two goals a game in the NHL. So Buffalo's one. Who are the other two?
The CBJs, the Carolina Hurricanes.
You only need two. So don't answer.
All right, those two.
But you're wrong on both.
Wow.
You're wrong on both. Columbus is scoring 2.53. They just can't keep the puck out of the net. They actually have the worst goals against average in the league right now at 3.67. The other two teams that are below two goals a game offensively so far this season, this is a bit of a surprise. One is not. Florida's, you know, been up and down.
Yeah.
But the other one is Winnipeg. Winnipeg right now is at 1.82 goals per game.
That is changing, and Blake Wheeler with his tip-ins is single-handedly trying to change that.
Yeah. So, but they're 9-6-2 through 17 games, and of course the reason why they are is you want to talk about X-Files. The two goals a game they're giving up right now with Andrej Pavlik as their goalie, that's an X-File. That's like Tombs. That's a man who can fit through sewer grates and stuff. That's an X-File right there. I can't figure it out.
No, both goaltenders are playing well right now for Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Both?
Yeah.
It's not the way you get McDavid, guys. Sorry, Chevy. It's not the way you're going to do it. You don't get McDavid by winning hockey games. Telling you now.
Curse is foiled again.
Little hint. Little hint to you, bud.
Curse is foiled again. Best wishes to Brian Murray. We should say that off the top of the show. Just a very sad and emotional vignette that Michael Farber did with Murray last night.
Yep.
Stage 4 cancer, and he's battling it. But it was a heartbreaking thing to watch.
Well, obviously, you know, the disease itself is heartbreaking. And then hearing Brian talk about how, you know, a simple colonoscopy not that long ago would have cured all this. I remember when Frank Zappa passed away in the 80s, that's one of the things that he said as well. Was it not early 90s? I don't even know when people pass away, all right? Apparently on this podcast, whether it's Frank Zappa or old goaltenders that were the first to handle the puck and wear a mask. Well, he wasn't the first, but he popularized it. Just like a simple colonoscopy. There is no reason, guys, not to do it. Honestly. It may not sound like the most enjoyable thing in your day, but do it. Because as Brian was saying, you know, there are some good days and some bad days, and you try to make as many good days as possible in the time you have left. Just freaking do it. There's no reason not to.
And just a brilliant hockey guy.
Nice
and,
man.
And a nice dude.
I know people have had battles with him, and when you're in hockey that long, you have battles. But I can say from my experience with Brian Murray, I have never had one exchange with Brian that I didn't come away with either feeling good, feeling like I learned something, or feeling like I didn't get what I needed for my job. It was a real delight. I'm writing an obit now, but he has always been a real delight to work with and to interview and to talk to.
And most of my interaction with him, to be honest, has been at like GM's meetings and stuff like that. But he's always been one of these guys to come out and face the scrum and try to tell as much as he can, which, you know, as much as Gary will let him. Boy, has he lived a life in hockey, hasn't he?
Right. Lifer. Like his predecessor, John Muckler. Lifer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He thinks he's got, a couple years, I think. I don't think he said it on the piece, but he's been telling friends and family that, you know, he's hoping for a couple of years, but I hope for way longer for that for Brian Murray, because he is one of the great guys of the game. And listen, there are so many times, because I work a lot with Doug McLean, and Doug and Brian, whether it was Detroit, you know, Washington, they go back, and they've worked together long. So I've heard plenty of outstanding Brian Murray stories. He is, to your point, he is one of the great guys of the game, Wish. He really is. And our thoughts and prayers and sending our strength and our kindness and consideration to Brian Murray, GM of the Ottawa Senators.
Scotty Bowman coming up soon. Gordie Howe hat tricks. Harold, I mean, people shouldn't aim for a fight if they have a goal and assist. Also, maybe rename it to the Sheriff Shanny hat trick. I've seen a lot of people saying that the name of the Gordie Howe hat trick should be changed to the
Cameron?
Brendan Shanahan hat trick.
Shanahan had a ton. Stan Mikita had a ton. Ted Lindsay had a ton of them.
Yeah.
Jerome McGinley's had a ton.
But, I mean, if we're going to change the Hart to the Gretzky, we should probably change the Howe to the Shanahan, shouldn't we?
Is Shanny number one? I thought Mikita had the most. I got to go back to the game sheets. It's either Mikita or Shanahan. I don't think Ginla's up at that echelon yet. Ted Lindsay's right in there. And Gordy himself only had two.
Keith Hagel writes in, only if you count them as any serious kind of stat, it should just be a fun term
a
player did that night. So not calling it an actual stat.
Nah, it's just a fun thing to say.
Andrew says that they are overrated because goals and assists are nice, but fights are usually negatives. You could have had another point while serving that 5-minute major. So the goal and assist, hey, that's great. Congratulations. The fight, you've hurt your team.
You know what the Wayne Gretzky hat trick is, right?
A goal and an assist and letting Semenko or McSorley fight for you?
Yeah, you let the goon do your fight. So Wayne Gretzky hat trick.
Yeah.
Let Semenko or Marty jump over the boards and take care of it for you.
This is Chris. If you're already
Before we go on, and Scotty's coming up here in a couple of seconds, what did you think quickly of the Nystrom hit on Tarasenko? I didn't think it was that bad.
I didn't think it was that bad either.
I know Reeves went right at him afterwards.
But, I mean, listen, this is
the Tarasenko, like ball.
He's a bald eagle right now. I mean, he is a protected status. He is endangered species status the way he's playing. I got to be honest, man, it is so much fun to have a player like that right now in this league.
Tarasenko.
Like we talked about it before, you know, with the Pure Hockey Joy stuff, but everybody is zeroed in on him every night now, and
he's
it's so much
player.
Fun to follow it on social media.
Yeah, 100% true. Our guest is standing by.
Joining us down the line, coaching legend.
True.
Man who Merrick and I are just enormous fans of, and it's such a joy to have him on the podcast. Scotty Bowman joins us here on the Merrick vs. Brzezinski show. And Scotty, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, good to be on.
Hey, quickly, Scotty, I want to jump right in on goaltenders. We'll talk plenty about the men that are going into the Hockey Hall of Fame on Monday and joining you. You've had some great goaltenders going back to St. Louis with Glenn Hall, and then we have, of course, Ken Dryden and Brasso. But let me ask you about Dominik Hasek, because you've seen so many great goaltenders. You went through the golden era of goalies in the NHL. Where does Dominik Hasek rank on the Scotty Bowman totem pole of great goaltenders?
Yeah, it's a tough call because I only had him for the one season, you know, as a coach, of course. And I know a lot about him because of the job that he did in Buffalo. But I go back to the 92 final. It was really an odd feeling. Dominik was the backup, as we know, in Chicago. I think he spent a lot of time that year with Indianapolis in the International League or
yeah, the IHL.
One of the minor,
yep.
IHL. And I know in game four, it was really, I remember like it was yesterday, they took out, Mike Keenan was coaching, they took out Eddie Balfour. I'm not sure the score when they took him out. I think it was 4-2 or something. They took him out. And Jágr was a young player. He was in his second year. He wasn't even 20. And Jágr was, like when Hasek went in the net, Jágr was pleading with the players, look, we got to win this game. We're up 3-0. He said, don't let this guy start. Don't let him win a game for them because we're going to have our hands full. He, of course, they're both Czech. Mm-hmm. And we did get a couple of goals on him, but, you know, it was in the third period. But we were humming in the third period. I don't know how many shots we had. We had breakaways. We had chance after chance, but fortunately we did win. I think we won the game 6-5, I think it was. I'm not sure, but Hasek went in maybe partway through the second period. But I knew how good he was with Buffalo, the job that he won series for them and won so many close games. And then when we got him, when I went to Detroit, we had won cups both with Mike Vernon and Chris Osgood. And when Ken Holland made the trade, you know, to acquire Hasek, you know, I think he, as we know, he wanted out of Buffalo, and we're fortunate that we got him into Detroit. And you know, we had a real top team, but his career to me was identified when we fell behind. I mean, we were big rivals with Colorado. I think we each beat each other. Whoever would win would probably have a good chance to win the cup. And when he went into Colorado in game six after losing, trailing 3-2, and we won that game 2-0, and then he came back, and of course, game seven, we won 7-0. But, you know, back-to-back shutouts against a real good team, that was pretty well a crowning touch. It was my last season coaching. And I mean, we did win the next series in five games, and one did go into long overtime, but those two back-to-back, especially the sixth game was right on the line. You know, it was a 1-0 game till late in the third, I think it was. But he was outstanding. That was probably his shining game that I can remember playing as a coach. You know,
yeah, just an exceptional talent. You mentioned Colorado. What was it like game planning against Peter Forsberg on the other side of the ice?
It's tough because Forsberg and Sakic, and then we had Yzerman and Fedorov. I mean, there's four centermen. Three of them are already, well, two of them are in the Hall of Fame, and Forsberg is going in. And I imagine Fedorov, when he doesn't play anymore, will be eligible and should get in. But, Forsberg was, when he was healthy, and I remember when he was healthy and when he was nursing injuries, but it was, as a healthy Peter Forsberg was maybe one of the first European players that came over. Although Fedorov was a similar type, they were so good both ways that I think their offense was often overshadowed by their defense because they got great numbers. But defensively, they were two of a kind. I mean, these are players you don't get a lot of. You get a player that you can play against anybody. You don't worry about with the other teams matching up. That's an exception, and that's what Peter Forsberg was.
you know, in a lot of ways, and Scotty, you saw this with the first Swedes coming over. While we think of Börje Salming and Inge Hammerström, there were one or two before that who had, you know, training camps with various teams. But I mean, the stereotype of the Swedish hockey player as being, you know, too soft, and we kept hearing, you know, chicken Swede, and you can run him out of the building. You know, in how many different ways did Peter Forsberg specifically break that stereotype? You could argue one of, if not the greatest power forward of that generation was a Swede.
Well, he's a physical player to start with. Peter Forsberg liked to initiate contact. Yep. He was well put together. He was strong, very physically strong. And of course, we know he's a great skater. But I think his offensive skills were maybe overshadowed because he was such a good defensive player. And I imagine, you know, I never coached him. I coached him in All-Star games. You can't really tell by that. But as a coach, you know, you're able to put him in any situation, and you don't worry about having to put a player with him to look after him. Mm-hmm. But I don't know where that came from. Maybe coming over at a young age and just getting right into the NHL, he didn't turn his back on anything, you know.
Moving over to a non-player going in this year. So I was banging the Pat Burns to the Hall of Fame drum for a long time, and I'm very happy the selection committee finally heard the beat. Your thoughts on Pat Burns being immortalized this weekend?
Well, you know, I coached a bit against him, not a lot, but I got to know Pat living down in Sarasota, and in the last couple of years of his life, I would go to a lot of games in Tampa. I'd go over on the other coast and we'd meet. And I got to know Pat pretty well. We just seemed to hit it off, you know. And I think what Pat was, when they have that saying, what you see is what you get, that's what you got with Pat. There's no monkeying around, you know. He would stand up for anything. And I think that's the way he coached. You know, I'd say he was a pretty hard-nosed coach that got a lot out of his players. If you look at, and people often say about those people, well, you know, why did he not stay with the team? Because he probably had better opportunities. I did the same thing. I felt a lot of what I had gone through, he had to go through. And he coached, he coached in Montreal, he coached in Toronto, he coached in Boston. I mean, he coached in a lot of top hockey. I mean, you look at when you talk about the temperature of hockey fans and the temperature of the media, you're not going to make in many cities different than those three. So, I admired the way Pat ran his teams. And he was very good as a coach of getting the right players on the ice. He was insistent on a way a player would have to play, and no monkeying around. You'd never get an edge. He's going to, as a coach, there's some coaches that don't care about who they play, but he cared about how he put his players on the ice.
You know, we were talking to Jeff Skinner of the Carolina Hurricanes the other day, and the conversation turned to Bill Peters, the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. And the only other coach, because Carolina, Scotty, as you well know, practiced line changes. And the only other coach, Scotty, that I know that consistently practiced line changes in practice, like game in and game, was you. You were the only guy that I ever saw practice line changes. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, the details, the tiny little details that go into making a great coach.
Well, I think, I mean, I see it in games now, and I think now when you get the big end zones and you get the second period and you see how tough a change it is, although there are ways now because of the tag-up rule, you probably can get off at certain times, and you can just dump it in and get off, but a lot of players, they just amble to the bench. They don't move, and I used to be insistent that, you know, you're not that tired, you can't give me three more strides at full speed. Mm-hmm. And if you are tired, you can wait on the bench. No, we practiced it, and I used to have a controlled scrimmage, and I had a football horn, and because I didn't want to blow a whistle, it stopped. And the horn would tell one team, the next time you get the puck, all five guys are thinking of one thing. We got to make a good line change. I mean, you can't change five at once. And it's usually easy to get defensemen off. As you know, the benches in the first and third period, especially, it's pretty easy in some instances. It's either your left or right defenseman that's got an easy change. So it's only a more difficult change for his partner. But on the forwards, they have to change at the right time because I always was taught, and I learned very well from the late Paul Blake. He said, tired players make mistakes. And when you get real good teams and you get real good players on the ice and you get a real close game, usually it's a tired player that's just going to make that one play that can turn a game around for you. And I think that the emphasis now, I mean, I see some sloppy line changes, and I see players coming off the ice on many different teams when they shouldn't be coming off, but that's what it is, and they pay for it oftentimes. So I didn't know that Bill was practicing it, but it's a big asset. A team that changes well is going to have an edge over it. It's not going to happen every night, not going to happen every shift, but they're going to have an edge.
Scotty, I always wanted to ask you this question because it's a book that I revisit before every season as sort of a ritual. What did you read Dryden's book, The Game, and if so, what did you think of it?
Oh, I read it when it first came out, and I read the I went through it. You know, I didn't know he was keeping all the notes the year that he decided that he was going to write the book and go on it. But he is kind of bang on, you know, with the attitude of the players because, you know, he was a different kind of player than most of the goalies in the league. And he was, you know, he was very, very observant. And in fact, I can tell you that a story about Ken Dryden you'd probably like to hear if I can do it in a quick hurry.
Yeah, but no, take your time.
There's
a gentleman down where I live here. He's actually he sells used cars. His name is Mike Heineman. He went to Boston University. He told me a story about Ken Dryden. When Ken Dryden went to McGill University and played with the Montreal Voyageurs, his roommate was Mike Heineman. They lived in Montreal. They weren't married. They lived in NDG in Montreal. And Ken Dryden had just finished writing exam, or he had one exam left to go, and he only played home games in Montreal, but there was a team in Quebec City in the American League at the time, and he played a game in Quebec City, and he got beat for 7 goals in Quebec City. He should never have played the game. That's what he told his roommate. He came back to Montreal, and as a note at his residence or a message or something that go down to Montreal, this is 1971 in the spring, probably late March, go down to Montreal, Mr. Sam Pollock wants you to be at his office at 11 a.m. And he told Mike Heineman that this gig is going to end, and they're not going to be allowing me to play home games and everything else, but I have another year at school or something. He went down to Montreal, and Sam Pollock asked him what his schedule was like. Well, he said, I'm writing my last exam. I got one more exam, then I'm free. And that's when Sam Pollock decided to give him a 2-week trial with the Canadians. And that's when that's a true story. And Mike Heineman swears that he said, you ask Ken Dryden the next time you see him, does he remember his last game in the American Hockey League? that's what he told me. He said he got beat for 7 goals, but his mind wasn't on the game. His mind was on his exam.
You know, I'm glad we're sort of picking up here with the Montreal Canadiens of the 70s. One of, if not the greatest team ever assembled. We just saw Guy Lafleur's number 5 go to the rafters on Saturday. I always sort of chuckle, Scotty, when I hear people say, you know, you need big size down the middle. It's impossible to win. I don't care what era it is. You can't win without big centermen down the middle. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, Scotty, off the top of my head. When you were running and winning all those cups with the Montreal Canadiens in the 70s, you had Lemaire. You had Jarvis, you had Risebrough down the middle. None of them.
I think the first couple of years, we also had Pete Mahovlich.
And Pete had some size on him. Absolutely. Pete certainly did.
But we traded him in 76, I think.
Yeah. 76. But, I mean, Lemaire, Jarvis, and Risebrough, neither of them were over 6 feet tall.
No. Well, Jarvis was the smallest of two. And talking about Lemaire, I don't know if the people in today's could appreciate. I'm just hoping and wondering why his number isn't retired, because I had a lot of players in Montreal, a lot of Hall of Famers. I mean, they all can't be retired for sure. But Jacques Lemaire was a player just like a Peter Forsberg. As a coach, you want to put him out there. You're in the playoffs. I mean, if you look at his scoring record, like I think Lafleur and Schutt would tell you, their careers changed when Lemaire went in with them in 1976. And played with those two. He did most of the defensive work. He stayed down low with the defensemen. Lafleur and Schutt played up high all the time. They scored a lot of goals, 2-on-1. rebound, stuff like that. But Lemaire made it possible because he still scored his 30 goals a year, but he was so good defensively. He was on a par with any defensive center in the league, but he was great offensively. And I really think that when you look at the players that are retired, Jacques Lemaire, not only for his, you know, his scoring, but for his all-around play, his playoff work, his number, I hope they think about if they're going to retire one. It's tough because there's so many retired.
Yeah.
I think Lemaire deserves to be retired.
Yeah. Hey, last one for me, Scotty, and thanks so much for your time today. It's been great. Do you have a player today that you really enjoy watching, someone who may be a throwback to the kind of players you loved coaching, or someone you just, you know, will make time to watch if the game's on?
Well, I mean, obviously, I watch all the Blackhawk games on TV. I go up and see half a dozen. But I get to see Tampa Bay play all their home games. And I don't see all their road games. I see some on television. And I can tell you, like, especially what he went through last year, watching Steve Stamkos game in, game out, wow. I mean, that's some player that, you know, he's a player. He's a special player that the fans would, I mean, when things aren't going 100% for your team, you'd want to go see Steve Stamkos play, you know. And there's very few games that he goes through that he doesn't get scoring chances. And I don't criticize their team, but I don't think he has the luxury of having any Norris Trophy defensemen. I mean, maybe Hedman, when he comes back, would be thinking he's really improved, but he's injured. But he has to do a lot of puck lugging up the ice. You know, he can move from center to right wing. He's some player, and we didn't get a chance to see him in the Olympics because he was injured. But,
yep.
You know, I don't know of a player in the league that's going to be able to outscore this guy.
Scotty, last one for me, and like Greg said, thanks so much for spending so much time with us and sharing your thoughts. It's always a delight to speak with you. I'm going to throw a dart here and go old time when you were in Peterborough behind the bench. And I'm not sure if you were on the bench coaching at this particular moment, but if you were, the Plager fights, Bob and Barkley, Guelph, Peterborough. Were you there?
Yeah, I used to get upset at Barkley because Bob played for Guelph and Barkley played for Peterborough.
Yeah.
And they'd have these scraps, and then after the game they'd go across to the snack bar and have an after-game hamburger. I used to kid Barkley, but they were, oh boy. I mean, I've had a lot of competitive players, and Barkley was an ultra-competitive player that I ever saw, you know. And I got him back when I went to the Blues in St. Louis after, I think we got him from Eddie Shore in Springfield.
Yeah.
Boy, he was some player. And Bob was no slouch either, and they, as a tandem, you have to keep your head up, for sure.
Because I almost want to say, from the people that I've talked to that were there, it started on the ice, and it went to the penalty box, and, you know, underneath the seats after, as they're kicking the guys out, like, yeah, the Plager boys just couldn't stop fighting each other.
But it ends up with a meat and a hamburger at the snack bar right on the corner of the arena. Yeah, they would, and the next game they'd have another one. But no, I don't know how many fights they. But I knew their dad, Gus Plager. They're both from Curtin Lake, Ontario. And oddly enough, I couldn't believe how tough these guys were and the way they played. And Gus Plager was a referee. I said, gee, he must not have called many penalties, you know.
I think Gus was a boxer too, wasn't he? Or he used to have a ring for the boys.
Sure, but
we
can't forget the third son, Billy.
Yeah, Billy Plager, of course. Yeah,
they were hip checkers. I don't know now though if they would. Barkley hit a little. Bob and Barkley both hit below the waist.
Yeah.
And I don't know now with the if you come through the neutral zone with your head down, you're going to get hit.
Well, Leo Boyven was always the best, right, Scotty?
Yeah, that's another guy.
I mean,
Boyven, and there was one in Oakland. Graves, I think it was.
Hilliard Graves.
Hilliard Graves.
Yeah, yeah, and he was raw bone tough, too. I mean, I guess one of the, and you see Tampa quite a bit. I mean, Radko Gudas hits like that.
Yeah, he hits after they shoot. He gets in a lot of he's got a shield on right now. I don't know what happened to him, but he's one of the hitting defensemen in the league, for sure. Yeah. Yes.
All good. Scotty, always a delight. Thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Okay, thanks.
There you go. The great Scotty Bowman.
Scotty.
Bowman.
The greatest coach.
Yeah, it's
all time.
I don't know. We don't know what all of you got us for our third birthday, but
fourth.
Maddie got a Scotty Bowman.
I know,
and
we got to talk about the Plagers, Barkley, Bob, and Billy, and we got to reference Leo Boivin and Hilliard Graves.
Leo Boivin name drop. I know. I got to talk about my favorite hockey book.
It's good. Yes.
It's not a surprise he likes the game. I mean, the game basically made Scotty out to be a genius. So it's not really an issue there. I don't think it's not like a tell all.
No.
Scotty,
well, I mean,
Scotty came off looking all that bad in that book.
What are you going to say about Scotty? Like, you know, he took the St. Louis Blues to consecutive Stanley Cups under his.
Oh, I know what you say about Scotty. He never played the game, right?
He did. Oh, who was it? I think it was Jean-Guy Talbot, who caught him with a stick when he was playing with the Junior Canadians. It ended his career.
Oh, he never played in the NHL though. So obviously, played in the NHL, you don't know anything about the NHL.
Yeah, no, of course not.
As per Chris Barch, I believe he said.
Yeah, I saw that tweet. I understand the frustration. I get it.
No, I get it.
I understand. I don't.
The thing about the Barch thing was just it's. Listen, I understand the idea that like someone like me or someone like Myrtle may not understand the nuances of a hockey fight, having never fought in the National Hockey League. That said, guys like Barch and guys like Bissonnette made some really good points after the McDavid thing. They don't understand what a reporter does. Here's what a reporter does. Yeah. We don't know shit. We ask people that do know shit. Yeah. Then we try to learn shit. Like, that's what a reporter does. It's the basis of journalism. So, no, you don't have to be in an NHL fight to understand what happens in an NHL fight. Just like you don't have to travel to effing Mars to write on Mars. You don't have to do it.
I know.
You
all
learn
this
stuff. You ask people smarter than you. Here, I didn't know jack shit about the Plagers, Leo Boivin. You asked Johnny Bowman. Now I know. It's pretty easy, right?
I understand where the frustration comes from, though, with Barch.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, how many times, like, let me equate it to your industry, although you're online as opposed to print. I mean, we're watching the newspaper industry die a very violent death.
No, for
and
sure.
And how many times have we seen scribes completely lash out at the new brand of journalism?
Let me put it another way. You know where I used to work in college? Blockbuster Video. Blockbuster Video.
Mom, what's Blockbuster Video?
Yeah, exactly. You know what? My brother-in-law works in he works for a travel agency. His family has a travel agency. Love the guy.
Yeah.
I wish him well, but guess what? He's not. He's not Expedia, and he's not Priceline, and he's not all the places where the travel industry for me right now is a place that exists so people can book cruises. That's what you go to your travel agent to book a big cruise or
a thing. It's for,
but every other form of travel does not involve travel. I mean,
do it
so
online.
I completely understand the idea of here is the thing that I built my living on and my family has money because of this thing and there's food on the table because of this thing and now all of you have moved on from this thing. So I get that. Yeah. It's a fear and almost a frustration and an insult because for a hockey fighter, now it's not only like this thing doesn't exist, it's half the world saying that this thing is atrocious, that it's bad. This thing you did is bad. It's morally bad. So I get that.
I know. Listen, I've thought about this plenty. I'm not sure if you have. If there wasn't hockey, what the hell would I do? I mean, honestly, you know me,
I would
right?
be a,
what would I do?
See. I would be a district manager at Burger King. What would you do?
And you'd steal on the job.
You would probably be doing play by play for some for that luchador show that they have on the El Rey network here. That's what you'd be doing.
Oh,
you would
no,
have gotten off the
what?
Wrestling track.
I'd be all hippie down. I'd be like a yoga instructor or something like that.
Yeah,
I totally would.
You're tripping balls on some plant you ate. 100% Amazon.
Man, yeah, I yeah. know. I'd be like banging the legalized DMT drug.
Hey, do we have our victim there, Maddie?
I got a punt in 5 minutes. Should I even hang around for this? I got to go do Tim and Sid. Maddie's going to give him a call back.
I could roll if you want.
You probably, I'll do it from Calgary. Hey, by the way, have you seen how good the Canadian teams are doing lately, by the way?
They're all in playoff positions right
what
now.
What the hell? Holy smokes.
I know. Take a snapshot. End the season right now.
No, I know.
While there's still time.
Although, geez, Calgary's playing up freaking minds.
Well, that's why I wanted to get our guest on today because
you know what's cool.
Our victim for Game Show Friday is a Flames fan.
Let me ask you something. Maybe you can ask our guest if I'm not here. I don't know that I've seen another team. Kudos to Bob Harley. Use three defensemen on a power play. Because I was thinking about that last night with Montreal.
Wow.
Like how are they going to move
so
in?
Who did Hartley use?
Yeah, he'll use Giordano with TJ Brody and Dennis Weidman.
And Weidman. Well, that makes sense. I mean, Weidman's hardly a defenseman.
But still. But still the defenseman.
As they say in the Capitals, they use John Carlson, Carl Arsner, and Mike Green on the same.
No, so one defenseman. you know, it's shit. Sorry. Come on, it's
that's an anti-American statement. This is an anti-Mike Green statement.
The only defenseman there is from the Western Canadian Hockey League, and that's Carl Arsner. Yeah, it's weird. I was thinking about that with Gonchar. I was like, what are they going to do with it? Because they ended up going two left-hand shots, but did an umbrella formation. They had opposite shots on the wall, so you could feed for a one-timer. But are they going to use three defensemen on the power play? Because you know Montreal, like their first unit power play is out there 90 seconds. There's no 60 and off. There's like 90 seconds, and then we'll come off.
I have PTSD about the umbrella power play. Like I don't like the formation to begin with because I really do think it opens yourself up to shorthanded attempts the other way.
Yeah.
But the late great Herb Brooks used to run it with the Devils, and he used to put Bernie Nichols at the top of the blue line as the handle of the umbrella.
Yeah.
And it was just like, why? Because it wasn't Bernie Nichols back in the 80s, I can tell you that. It was a much more methodical Bernie Nichols. He used to be the top of the umbrella. I was like, why would you do that? So I'm scarred by it 20 years later. To tell you something. All right,
hard.
You need to go do a team and sit.
Yeah, I'll get out of here. Listen, great week, eh? Like, big guests and fun shows. We ended up doing four of these things, like the old times. And thanks to Talia Deshane for reminding us of our birthday. You know what? You know how you know you're getting old? You forget your birthday.
How old?
That's how you know you're getting old. You forget your birthday.
Listen. You, this is the part where we're going to get schmaltzy a little bit right now. I've had more fun doing this show than I ever thought I could possibly have doing a show every day.
Tickle me into the chin.
It's an hour out of my day. Like I said, episode one, people still remember this in episode one. This show takes place when I used to masturbate, and it really was going to be a problem for me. But I kicked the habit.
Did you just hear me talking about Leo Boyven and the Plaguers? Like that took the that's my version of beating it like it owes you money, right there. I mean, when would I ever talk about Hilliard Graves a day in my life on a podcast or a radio show?
You're the best, and you teach me about hockey every day we do this show, and I'm so happy that you and I have been able to make something cool.
The only thing
we wanted to do when we started the show was make something cool.
Well, we thought it was going to last a cozy 2 weeks when we started the show. Like, okay, well, I'm going to run out of stuff to say in about 2 weeks, which I don't know about you. I'm going to have nothing to say, and then that'll be it, and we'll say, hey, man, remember when we used to have that podcast? What's a podcast?
Yeah. Yeah.
But somehow he managed to go 4 years. So now everybody yeah. tweet Rob Pizzo at the same time and say that Greg Wyshynski's favorite show is the one that he does with Jeff Merrick.
It is. It is my favorite show. I love Pizzo, but this is a different show, and it's my favorite show. And frankly, the only reason I say it is because I never thought that I would make my first million off this show before a 3-year anniversary. But it happened. It happened after year one. Oh, wait, that's right. We've never been paid.
I was going to say, you know, we're working on our second million here on the show because we've given up on our first. So we're fully into million number two.
All right.
Hang on. It says a pause. I do like the fact that I haven't taken a dime out of this thing. I really do. I mean, listen.
Why?
People have I don't know. There's just some things that you do. Aren't there some things in your life you do just because you're proud of them? Like you do them just for like a pride of ownership or a pride of performance, and you don't like look for a check in your mailbox for it?
Well, if your argument is that us doing the show with like sponsors would have overly complicated things and not allowed us to do the show that we do, I agree with you. On the other hand, not getting paid triggers the martyr DNA that I have from my mother, and I climb up on the cross a lot and talk about how we don't get paid for doing the show.
See, that's the difference between, you know, that's the difference between the Canadian and me and the American and you. Right there. I'm just like, oh, well, we have a social security net. Everything will be fine. We'll all be taken care of. And you're like, damn it. We tamed the West and now we're taming the internet and there better be a dollar sign at the end of it.
I better get money for this show or else I'll end up in the slums and the government's going to have to pick me up. But I'm not taking a dime from the government. All right. You go do Tim.
Thanks for a great week. And thanks for 4 years of great loving here online. Wish.
Oh, you're sweet.
Tickle me, wish. Okay, go do
now
the intro.
Now it's time with him out of the way. And for the remaining listeners who still love this gimmick, for a Friday favorite.
It's Game Show Friday!
Apologies to Scott the Noon from Canada, Calgary to be exact, because the Canadian on the podcast left to do Tim and Sid, because Scotty Bowman ran long. Scott, it's just me, Greg. Hope you're okay with that.
I was on the line for all of that circle jerk in there, so it was great.
Yeah, I know. It was a Scotty Bowman double jerk into a Merrick versus Wyszynski circle jerk, and now you're just left with me, a jerk.
Well, I'm frankly glad that Merrick left. I wouldn't have been able to live up to his impressions after Bowman. So yeah,
I know, I know, exactly. And then you would have had to have heard his incessant whining about Game Show Friday as well. But you are the victim today, sir. Tell us about yourself, Calgary, eh?
Yeah, partial season ticket holder, was at the game last night to witness yet another Calgary Flames win. First of many this season to come, I'm hoping.
So from that, I glean that you're not all that upset that they won't be getting a high draft pick, that you believe that the cupboard is full enough where it's time to put on the big boy pants and start competing for a playoff spot.
I wouldn't go that far. I came into the season hoping for a bottom three finish, and they might not drop that low. It's just good to see them playing hard. They're at least fun to watch. They're not like the Sabres, so every game is entertaining, and that's all I can really ask for.
Sweet. I don't know how much time I have in this room, so let's get right to it, because I want to make sure we don't get kicked out of here like I kicked somebody out of here to take the room. Five questions, three categories in each question. You get to pick one of the three. You get three categories correct. You win Game Show Friday, and that's the way it works. Maddie will send you a prize at some point. You said your strengths were the Calgary Flames and NHL in the Olympics, so we have those two questions peppered throughout. And are you ready to play Game Show Friday?
Ready when you are.
All right, Scotty. Here we go. Categories and question number one. Round one. Calgary Flames trivia, obviously. Merrick versus Wyszynski trivia, obviously. And current NHL stats. That is round one. Which one would you like?
Might as well start hot with the Flames and see if I can get it.
All right, sir. We all know that Jerome Iginla is the all-time leader in points and goals and second in assists all-time to Al MacInnis for the Calgary Flames. Which Flames forward is the next highest ranking player in both goals and assists in franchise history?
After Iginla?
After Iginla, yes.
That would be Theo Fleury.
Correct, Amundo. Theo Fleury is the answer we're looking for, second to Iggy in both assists and goals as a forward. So round one is a success. Round two. Calgary Flames sweater numbers, celebrating a birthday, or Hockey Hall of Fame class of 2014?
Let's switch it up, go with the Hall of Fame class.
Hall of Fame class 2014, okay. Asking a Canadian this question could be a little tricky.
Uh-oh.
Which U.S. hockey record does Mike Modano not hold? So we're looking at a multiple choice here. Which one of these records does Mike Modano not hold? Goals by a U.S.-born player in the National Hockey League, plus-minus for an American-born player in the National Hockey League, points by an American-born player in the National Hockey League, or playoff points by an American-born player in the National Hockey League? Goals, plus-minus, points, playoff points, all by an American-born player.
Whew.
I know. They get harder.
Yeah, it's going to be a guess no matter how long I think about it. So I guess I will just go right out and say plus minus.
Ah, you are correct.
Ah,
he holds goals, he holds points, he holds playoff points, but the leader in plus minus, Mark Howe, plus 400 in his career. So you are correct, sir. So you are now 2-0. Heading into round three, doing quite well. Your categories are Swedes, Calgary Flames playoff history, or the Olympics.
What was the first one, weeds?
Swedes.
Oh.
Or we could do weeds. How much do you know about dandelions? It's Swedes, sir.
Just because it requires the least amount of, there's the least amount of knowledge to know about it, I'll go with Flames playoff history.
Flames playoff history, FTW for the win. Which team has the Calgary Flames faced the most in the Stanley Cup playoffs? Which franchise have the Calgary Flames faced the most in their history in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Okay, it's one of two.
Is it? There are other contenders. I'll tell you that. More than two teams. Yes.
I'm going to go with, I don't know, the Oilers.
You are incorrect. It is the other team you're thinking of, the Vancouver Canucks. Six times they have faced Vancouver. Five times they have faced Edmonton in the playoffs. You are 2-1 on the day on Game Show Friday. But round four beckons, and you can still close this thing out. Goalie masks, NHL nicknames, or the Olympics?
Go with the Olympics.
The Olympics. All right. This Finnish former National Hockey League star is second to Sven Johansson of Sweden for all-time points by a center in the Olympics. Former NHL star Finn, second to Sven Johansson of Sweden for all-time points by a center in the Olympics. Name him.
By a center. He's a Finn, you said?
He is. Not easy.
Not Timu, because it's a center.
As a center. All right, 5 seconds.
Saku Koivu?
Saku Koivu is correct. 28 points in his Olympic history. You are correct, sir. And you've won Game Show Friday. No one's come to bug me yet, so you'll get your choice now of one of two questions just to for shits and giggles. You've won the whole thing. Goalie masks or NHL nicknames? Which one would you like?
Nicknames. Let's see what you came
up
with.
All right, here we go. Current events question. Name the members of the STL line for the St. Louis Blues.
That would be Schwartz, Tarasenko, and the Latera, the guy that everybody's picking up in fantasy that I can't pronounce.
This is true. And then finally, goalie masks, just for shits and giggles. Patrick Laliem adopted this iconic Looney Tunes character as the image on his mask with the Ottawa Senators. Who was that character?
Oof.
I know.
My Liam knowledge is pretty limited. Did he have the Tasmanian Devil on his mask? I don't know if it was him.
Nah, it was Marvin the Martian, sort of inexplicably. Marvin the Martian was the character we were looking for. But you won. You did good. You went 3-1. That's really good. And congratulations on winning Game Show Friday. Anything you'd like to say or plug or do or what have you in the moments that we have remaining in the show?
Not really. If anybody is so inclined, my Twitter is @SDENOON. Use it semi-frequently, and most of the time when I'm using it, it's ranting about the Flames' performance, either drunk or sober, both of them. Other than that, not too much. Love the show. Been listening since the aforementioned days of Pizzo, so it's cool to get on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you've definitely been, as I often do when people get in to be game show contestants, search through the Puck Daddy email and see your name peppered throughout as a question of the day respondent as well, which is always a heartwarming thing. So thanks for your support for the show. And it's the you won Game Show Friday on the third birthday of the show. That's pretty good. It's a pretty remarkable thing.
Milestone.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, grandkids will be, tired of hearing the story, I'm sure, by the time you're done telling it.
I'll update my resume after I get off the call here.
I expect to see this on your LinkedIn. I won Game Show Friday on the third birthday show of the podcast. Thank you, Scotty, and thanks for the support, and keep in touch, okay?
For sure. Thanks very much.
All right. We go from, Skinner to Lundqvist to Bowman to Scott Tanu. The curve continues upward, I believe. Thanks again, everybody, for supporting the show as long as you have and continuing to support it. It's great. It's the best. No, none of us ever thought that it would take off the way it has, and to see the show in like the top 10 of all sports podcasts on iTunes on some days is pretty remarkable. And we thank you so much. We thank everybody who's gone to the Reddit, the MVSW Reddit, and has participated there. Hopefully Jeff and I will do a bit more Q&A stuff there as the season goes on. And thanks to everybody who participates in real time on the podcast. Your interaction really makes the show go in some ways. So we appreciate that. And then and thanks to everybody who then chimes in the next morning as you're working out or walking your dog or going to work. It's like the second wave, the second shift of listeners. Oh, by the way, I said the other day, we needed a name for the people that listen to the podcast, and there have been some really good options to put forth, especially on the Reddit. The Little Hobos, though, I think might be one that's the clubhouse leader right now for the people who follow this show passionately. So we may go with that as the name. And to that end, if you were wondering, we are going to do Littlest Hobo Game Show Friday next week. Merrick actually wanted, Mr. Busybody, actually wanted to have a little bit more time to craft the questions for that game. So we haven't forgotten about it. He wanted more time to do it, and that'll be fun. So anyways, thanks, everybody. Thanks, huge thanks to Maddie Brown for pulling Bowman and obviously for all of your work on this show to make it go and all that stuff. So that's really nice of you to do all the stuff you do. Yeah. Anyways, well, there you go. Anyways, yeah, thanks, everybody. We will talk to you next week, Monday. So Monday is going to be a bit more Hall of Fame talk with the class about the class of 2014. Tuesday will be the one where we will do some hardcore class of 2015 debate. So everyone get your Eric Lindros dossiers in hand and prepare for that hockey Armageddon that always comes around once a year. And talk to you soon. Thanks, everybody. Bye. Thank you.